Looking Forward Our Way podcast addresses today's critical issues affecting adults in Ohio. We focus on issues that affect our money and our neighborhoods. Our expert guests are here to provide the information and resources needed to address those challenges. We are looking forward our way. Hi, this is Brett. You may have heard that Columbus is one of the fastest growing cities in the country. Or you may have read about devastating health issues, such as the likelihood of infant death. Well, there are many rumors roaming the internet. The challenges impacting this region are real, but the strengths we share are prevalent. Today, we're going to dive into a report called Benchmarking Central Ohio 2024, which was commissioned by the Columbus Foundation to discern who we are, where we are, and the opportunities that lie in front of us. Let's welcome Matthew Martin, Director of Community Research for the Columbus Foundation. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
Yeah, hi, Brett.
It's so good to see you again.
It's good to see you too.
Matt and I met up a long time ago at the foundation. We keep running into each other.
You've been doing good work in the community for a long time.
So, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Well, when the benchmarking study came out and I saw your name on it, I'm like, oh yeah, this looks kind of interesting. You know, it is this report really gave me, I think I know the community pretty well because I've been doing all this stuff for so long. Lots of stuff, lots of new information. And so that's why I thought it would be really to our advantage to hear some of the details and some of the assumptions and misconceptions that happen when people only hear rumors.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're gonna dive right into this. The report was provided in 2024. You took on that task to disseminate it throughout the community, but there is so much that we want to cover. But before we get into those details, we always like to know the ins and outs of our guests. So tell us about you, about your work, and your time at the Columbus Foundation.
Yeah, well, thank you. I have been at the Columbus Foundation for 8 years now, working in the Community Research and Grants Management Department. I came to the foundation from the Kerwin Institute at Ohio State. So I'd been in that research world for a bit. I was there for almost a decade studying access to opportunity and community geography and what kinds of policies and investments can make places stronger and more inclusive. And so the opportunity to join the foundation really enabled me to take that perspective and lessons learned from studying communities, not just all across the state, but around the country, and enabling that to inform the grant making that we do and the community research and knowledge that we're developing on behalf of our donors and our community partners.
Well, and I think folks don't realize that there is a lot of information that has to come together for these reports and how much advantage the city has, other smaller communities would have, groups like MORPSI would have, where they could actually see all this information in one space, in one place. And your job was to get it out there.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the kind of strengths, blessings, but also challenges here in Columbus is that we are a really research and resource-dense community. I mean, as a state capital, there's obviously a lot of research that's done around policy. As a land grant university home, you know, there are bright minds studying, you know, all kinds of topics all the time. You know, we actually take the time in Columbus to study things and research them and try and really understand the root of challenges here. But we have almost an ecosystem of research that is so vast that it actually can become challenging to make sense of it all.
Yeah.
And to come to the point where we say, okay, so what does all that mean and what do we do about it? If this is a trend or a pattern that we see, what can we do as a city, as a region, in the corporate sector, in the public sector, in the nonprofit sector? So a lot of it actually is kind of parsing through all the noise and pulling out the true meanings and takeaways.
I think in mm-hmm. today's world, folks are seeing only the negative about research and science and where things came from and where they started. And yet we can't take care of issues and problems unless we know what happened and where we are today and what we want to have happen. And then the research helps fill those steps for us to get to that goal. And we're losing that flavor of research.
Yeah. One of my favorite books in my undergrad program at Wright State in the urban affairs and planning program there was How to Lie with Maps, which was based on an older book called How to Lie with Statistics. And, you know, that's now 20 plus years ago now. Now you can really say that, I mean, we could write a book about how to lie with facts.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And there's a lot to kind of cut through these days. But, you know, there's so many different dimensions to research. It's really about getting to the bottom of our challenges and our opportunities and figuring out how to leverage them. And you can research by, you know, collecting quantitative data and looking at it from multiple angles. You can do interviews and focus groups. But it's really, at the end of the day, it's all collecting information to try and understand what's really going on and what would make a difference.
Because our assumptions aren't necessarily what's really going on.
Right.
I always am teasing Brett that I'm the statistics person. I'm always, every time we do a podcast, his questions are all littered with these numbers that I throw in there. And that's really why I wanted you to come and talk about this benchmarking, because it's not just boring numbers. There's information behind all of this. But I have to give a shout out to Brett's wife, Angie, who is on the faculty at Wright State.
Nice. Yeah, exactly,
yes. So hi to Angie and all of her colleagues who taught you well.
Yeah, exactly.
I met my wife there. I met some very dear friends there, and it definitely helped set a trajectory for my life and my career. So.
Very cool.
Yeah. Good university. Yeah, exactly. Although Carol and I have worked with the Columbus Foundation for years, she introduced me to the foundation through my work at the nonprofit we both were a part of. There are many in our community who are not familiar with the organization. Can you give us an overview of the foundation's work and how that benchmark study fits into that mission?
Sure. Yeah, we're a community foundation that was established in the middle of World War II. And the remarkable thing about that is, you know, while everyone was paying attention to what was happening in Europe and in, you know, all the theaters of war, there were at least a handful of civic leaders here in Columbus who were thinking about the future, beyond the war, and the future here at home in Central Ohio, and how to strengthen and improve our own community, even in the midst of, you know, trying times around the globe. The first donation to the Columbus Foundation was made by Olga Anna Jones, who was a teacher and our city's first councilwoman. She made a $25 gift, and that, you know, was the beginning of the Columbus Foundation. Fast forward 80 plus years later, you know, we're a $4 billion institution that's granted out as much money as has come in, basically. We help individuals, families, and corporate donors fulfill their charitable goals, and we support the missions and the work of nonprofit organizations. But really, the community is the object and, you know, the heart and soul behind, you know, what we do and who we are. And strengthening and improving the community for the benefit of all is really the heart and soul of the foundation.
As Brett mentioned, I brought a different flavor of the foundation to our agency because I had worked with the foundation even under the previous director when I was in graduate school. And Jim Luck introduced me to the power of that community foundation. And it has grown enormously even in those years. But when you were saying about the woman who gave the first $25 donation, I realized my grandmother gave the first donation for what is now the Italian Cultural Center near St. John the Baptist Church in Italian Village. And all of a sudden that just hit me of how she showed me what her one little check could do. And the only reason she really was the first person who donated was because the pastor was visiting her and happened to mention that I was helping him get money. And so she wrote him out a check. Now that whole story now means a whole different thing for me. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
So,
there are families in Columbus whose names, you would recognize from the names of buildings and really generous examples of philanthropy. But there are far more families and individuals who are giving much more modest amounts. But all of that adds up to, a big impact annually, and over time. Mm-hmm. And, there wouldn't be a community foundation with only a handful of donors.
Absolutely.
It's truly a community project.
September, we're not posting this podcast right away. We're actually taping it in September, and September is Philanthropy Month. So we celebrated last week with the folks at the Columbus Foundation, and big shout out to all of your colleagues at the foundation because they do a phenomenal job.
Yeah, it's a really incredible team.
It is. Okay, enough of all of my meandering here. This is why we have questions. So this 2024 report is actually the eighth edition of this series going back to 2007. The report measures change and growth in the community, but that's kind of a simplistic phrase in a very complex world. Let's start our conversation on the purpose of the study and how and why it started and sort of the goals you hope to reach.
Yeah, so kind of go back to your question earlier about how work like this fits into the mission of the foundation. We support and commission research to help inform, the grant making that we do. It's all part of, what we strive for, which is the most effective philanthropy possible. And that community knowledge that's generated through that work certainly helps us make more effective grants, but it's also meant to do that for our donors and our community partners, the nonprofits that we support, so that as a community, we can achieve some alignment and some coordination in our efforts. This benchmarking series is really a key piece of that effort. As you said, it goes back to really the Great Recession, and its origin was in really wanting to take stock of where we are as a community, and it holds us up against a couple dozen peer regions, and that group of peers has changed over time throughout the series because as our community, as Central Ohio region has grown, the kinds of communities that we think of as peers, that's evolving a little bit. The kinds of communities that we aspire to be like or to be similar to has also changed. But if you think about, we're really wanting to have this regular check-in, the same way you would go, to your dentist every 6 months, or your primary care doc every year, just to, see how things are doing. You want to do that as a community, and going into that you might see some of the things that are strengths about our community, but you might also see things in which we would want to grow. And so a lot of it is really trying to identify those things and help inform some of our next steps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the study covers 10 counties around Central Ohio. It's a lot of people, a lot of land. How are the parameters of the research structured to cover such a big area?
Yeah, so it covers the 10-county metropolitan statistical area. And so that's a unit of geography that probably most captures the way our community functions, you know, like.
And that changed since 2000, the beginning, didn't it?
It does change. Yeah. It does change every so often. MSA boundaries get updated to reflect commuting patterns, right. Really. And so, for example, Hocking County was one of the most recent counties mm-hmm. added to Central Ohio. Mm-hmm. And that's because enough people have started commuting mm-hmm. into Central Ohio from some of those, what we think of as really outlying counties. And that phenomenon takes place, you know, all across the region as regions grow, as job markets continue to spread out throughout multiple county regions. And so it basically takes data at that 10-county MSA, which means a number of things, but it means that, you know, the data points in this report represent that entire region. But they don't necessarily reflect, you know, the reality on the ground in each individual census tract because things vary across that 10-county landscape. You know, these are all midpoints or averages for the entire region. So while there's a lot of utility in kind of seeing how Central Ohio stacks up to, you know, Cincinnati and Cleveland and Indianapolis and Nashville and Austin and Charlotte, it's actually also interesting to when you start looking at some of the indicators and saying, well, but it doesn't feel like that in my county or in my neighborhood.
My neighborhood, right.
Then you start to peel back some of the layers of the onion and say, well, why do you think that is? What's going on there? If it's not, if it doesn't seem that way in your nook of the region, what must it be like in some of the other places, good or bad, you know, mm-hmm. challenging or opportunistic? You know, so I think it also can help us get to some of the disparities that exist here locally.
So, Matt, when we were discussing this report, you and I, earlier in the year, I asked about the findings, and your response surprised me. The study doesn't give recommendations. Not, you know, everybody thinks a report's only going to tell you what you got to do. Instead, through analyzing the data, it can confirm what we have assumed about our region or dispel those myths about the makeup of a community, but it can highlight our strengths, as you mentioned, while defining challenges. Tell us a little bit more about why this is important, that you're not giving us answers.
Yeah, I mean, collecting the data is, you know, it isn't everything, but when you look at some of the same indicators, you know, edition after edition, and you kind of are forced to kind of look at it mm-hmm. on its face. There's a handful of indicators in this series that, unfortunately, we have not improved in throughout the series. If you go back and look at kind of small business, startups, and minority-owned businesses and business enterprises. Unfortunately, if you look at things like infant mortality, these are numbers that, in some cases, despite our best efforts, are just that we continue to lag in. I think the value in having to kind of look at the data, you know, every so often is that it, you know, it can kind of cut through our biases, our, you know, our ability to kind of wish for the best or have wishful thinking. And it forces us to, you know, to come back to the table and say, like, what are we missing on this? Or
right.
like for the communities that are doing better than us, like, what can we learn from them? Because there are places, there are regions in this cohort, in this study, that are doing much better on some of these things, on things like infant mortality. And I don't think that we need to be afraid of confronting those issues as a community, because we have some great initiatives underway that we've started because we realize some of these things. But we also need to be open to learning and to kind of coming back to the drawing board together. And so, you know, the recommendations and the what's next really comes out of the community conversations that happen once this report comes out. You know, we had a successful launch of it in the fall last year with the Columbus Metropolitan Club. They did a two-part series where we began to really unpack some of the key takeaways. And I think that's where it becomes a community asset, when we can kind of dig in together and start talking about what it's really telling us about our community.
There are policymakers, administrators, executive directors who are making decisions about utilizing funding or getting funding to take care of an issue, whether it's housing, transportation, infant mortality, or whatever. And this study is not going to just tell them what's going on here,
right?
But if Austin is doing a better job on infant mortality, what are they doing that better utilizes the resources? We use a lot of resources in this town, and it does not all come to a positive end.
Yeah.
It doesn't fix the problem. And so, yeah, if we can come up with information that leads us on a better path, that's why this research is so important.
Yeah, and I almost liken it to the commitment to improvement that you might see or hear about with Coach Day and the Buckeyes, where no matter if there was a win or a loss on Saturday, they're going to go watch the film.
Right.
All right.
And even if we won 70-0, we're going to be looking for things that we can do better next time. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of the mentality that we can have as a community as well. There's a lot to celebrate in Central Ohio. You know, I've been participating throughout this year in Leadership Ohio, and it's taken me around the state to learn from other communities, many places I know and love, like the Dayton area, but other parts of the state that I wasn't as familiar with. And in so many ways, you see the hardworking, you know, grit that is Ohio. Mm-hmm. But you also see that what's going on here in Columbus and in Central Ohio, what things that we feel like are normal to us aren't so normal throughout the rest of the state. And there's a lot, obviously, for us to make sure we're not taking for granted here in terms of the growth and the economic development and the jobs. Those are things that we can't take for granted. Even in all of that, though, even in our growth and the great headlines about being, you know, named first recently in economic development at a national level, that's great. But who's being left out of that? Who's not getting to participate in this growth? And
it's not going to last very long.
Right.
If everybody's not participating.
Right, right. And do we want to be the kind of community that, you know, is growing, but only 70% of the people get to really benefit from that growth?
So the data is giving us a snapshot of the makeup of our community, like how old we are, where we live, home ownership or rent, race, native or foreign born, where we work. Can you talk a little bit about who we are and what, if anything, makes us unique?
Yeah. When you look at the things that we're sort of top of the heap in, so to speak, within this cohort at least, you know, we're, even though from a demographic standpoint, we're also aging at a higher rate than maybe we used to. Among these regions, we're one of the younger regions. I think that's owing to, obviously, our strong university presence, and that's not even only Ohio State, but it being the scale that it is. Being a state capital, obviously, is a big part of that, and just our mix of industry. So I think there's a lot of things that keep young people coming to Central Ohio, and I think one of the things we're getting better at is keeping them here, you know, creating the kinds of opportunities that make them want to stay and be part of what's happening here. We have one of the best library systems in the country. Library visits per capita, we're second in the nation in that. And you know, we have a relatively low unemployment rate compared to a lot of places. What's interesting, though, about the things, just looking at rankings, for example, you know, we're in the top five in the gender pay equity indicator, but it's still like 81 cents or 84 cents on the dollar. So when we're looking at these sort of strengths, if you will, it's important not just to look at the ranking, which we all know that in Columbus, we can get really obsessed with rankings, especially in the fall, right?
Exactly.
But
yeah. We're not number one. We don't care.
But actually, right. What's the objective? You know, what's the objective here? Well, pay equity would be that everybody gets paid what they're worth and equitably compensated for like work, right? That's what we're aiming for. We're aiming for 100 cents, you know, 100 cents on the dollar,
1-to-1. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
So celebrating that we're in the top five is kind of tone deaf if we're still in a place where we don't really want to be as a community. So there's things like that. One of the more gender inclusive communities in the Midwest and in this cohort. A volunteer rate that exceeds most of the cohort as well, although that doesn't seem to translate in charitable giving as strongly. And so that's even something that we're like taking a harder look at as an institution. And what does that mean? What does that one data point really reflect? And what kinds of things can we do? Which, I mean, this is part of our mission all the time, is to think about how to inspire greater generosity in the community. We do that obviously through things like the Big Give and the Big Table, where, you know, you're inviting everyone in the community to participate in it. But yeah, so those are some of our strengths. You know, we're in the bottom five in a handful of public health measures and have been there for a while. So things like overdose deaths and adult diabetes rates and the infant mortality rate that I mentioned earlier. Those types of things are really concerning because, you know, on some of those, it's not like we're caught off guard. We've been paying attention to some of those things and working on them, and yet still aren't seeing the kind of progress that we would want to as a community. Some of that speaks to the way that these things are tied into bigger phenomenon in our community, you know, and actually that's a big part of this report in its comprehensive nature and having 55 indicators is that, you know, it's meant to kind of help us see the big picture of the community and not just focus on one or two things. You know, we've done really well in job growth as a region over the last couple decades, but we really took our eye off the ball on housing. And now you see that we've underbuilt for years, and that's something that we need to pay more attention to. But while we're paying attention to housing, it doesn't mean that we can take our eye off of infant mortality or assume that things will be fine over there in the early childcare space if we just keep building houses. You know, you've got to work on all these things simultaneously and lean in together as a community.
And some of the sins can be interlocking as well, too. One can affect the other. It's a domino effect.
That's right.
You fix this, then it kind of goes into that, goes into that, goes into that.
That's right.
And maybe it's not necessarily figuring out what is the first domino to fall, but any of them can help with the wave.
When you're taking the statistics on a 10-county basis or conglomerate, are these issues looked at differently by each county? I mean, I know the report has to be at that 10-county area, but there are some entities within that 10-county area that could probably use specific information and the synthesis of that, all that data for just their particular region. For instance, Madison County looking at infant mortality is tremendously different than Franklin County looking at infant mortality. So is that information available to the entities who are in need of it?
So this study doesn't necessarily break down all these data points at a sub-county level, but our friends at the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission do a really good job of breaking down quite a few of these at a county and municipal level. I mean, their membership is made up of communities from all across not only that 10-county region, but even a 15-county region. And so they are pretty consistently pulling some of these data for their member communities. And there are other partners like them in the region that help disaggregate. What's interesting is that sometimes you find that there are certain challenges that are sticky in rural areas and urban areas alike.
Right.
So, you know, something that we've been paying attention to since the beginning of the pandemic, like a lot of folks have, is, you know, digital skills and access to devices and, you know, affordable high-speed internet. And some of those challenges are actually pretty consistent across rural and urban areas for different reasons. You know, in rural areas, it's more that the technology just doesn't reach some places. In urban areas, it may be that there's only one or two providers, and so there's essentially a monopoly, and there's nothing really affordable, and there aren't updates being made to the grid. But the result is the same for households in their efforts to access, you know, educational opportunities, healthcare, you know, jobs, things like that.
Well, I just keep thinking my county, Delaware County, is such an a strange conglomerate of things going on because of that whole Polaris Parkway build that changed the flavor of what had been a very rural county. Other than the city of Delaware, it was just small towns and farmland. And then suddenly the farmers started selling land across the southern part of the county. So even within a county, this data would be really interesting, broken down. But as you said, our friends at MORPSE do a great job of doing that. So wonderful.
They do. And they're obviously really, you know, locked arms with partners in and around Licking County right now with, you know, all the growth that's happening there and is expected to happen there. And, you know, even at the county level, there are partners coming together to, you know, try and develop a plan and a path forward. It's interesting you touch on, you know, the urban rural, you know, a part of the region that once felt not that long ago felt really rural, you know, is now seeing this development. And one of the things that pops up in this study is our use of land and our loss of agricultural land. And as it turns out, you know, if you think about what are the ways to preserve some of our small towns, some of those rural areas and the agricultural or pastoral feel, in a lot of our community, the answer is density in the cities, density in the metropolitan area, because that's what's going to take development pressure off of those rural areas. And if we're using the infrastructure we already have and making sure we're not underutilizing it, then we're kind of working on multiple things at once. I don't know that many people understand how much of our growth, our population growth in recent years is owing to our immigration from refugees, but not just refugees. And not from one particular part of the world and not from one particular economic status. We actually have a really remarkably diverse international community that, in this cohort, at least, it's one of the most diverse and it's one of the most recently arrived communities proportionately. But it makes up 70% of our population growth.
And I've heard recent study from it was a gentleman from Jewish Family Services talking about this on another podcast, that the those refugees, those immigrants, have a high percentage of success in regards to starting a business, actually adding to the community.
Yeah.
Versus what our perception of them being a drain. They're not.
Right. They're right. They're creating.
They're new, adding to our community in a much bigger way than we probably ever thought they could.
Yeah. Yeah. And even like there are neighborhoods that have experienced some economic revival. Mm-hmm. Like Northland is a great example.
Absolutely.
Like they've brought that community back to life. And in the absence of like a real plan or strategy from the city or the county even.
Yeah. And sometimes you just need to lay off of it, let it happen organically. Yeah,
create fertile soil. Well, yeah.
You know, Columbus has always been a huge hub of immigration, going back to the Germans and Irish and then the Italians in the early 1900s. But
we're back to actually the last time that immigrants and refugees made up a proportion of Franklin County, at least, that that they do now was like the 1890s. Mm-hmm. But it's also from many more places around the world than it was at that time.
Right. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
We'll
add that section. Just what you said, that's perfect. That's a nice drop. You want to go right into the benchmark compared to Central Ohio to 22 other cities?
I can. Do you need to ask a question?
When he started talking, we'll just add that. Because you had just talked about cities and that sort of thing. Adds right to that.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think there's a question that has to be added before that. So I love it.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
I want to just make sure that we've got all the... Yeah. If you did all the work to put your notes together.
Right. Sure, but no, it's a great addition, but I can splice that right in there and then we can go right to that question.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Matt, you've mentioned the word cohort a couple of times, and that's probably one thing we should make clear, that this benchmark is really a comparison of Central Ohio to like 22 other city SMSAs across the country. How do we compare with these groups, and which areas should we concentrate on in order to maximize our resources and potential?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's a good place to start, really. So the cohort is, you know, there are some Midwest peers that, you know, we would all be familiar with, like our sister cities here in Ohio, Indianapolis, Pittsburgh. Even Chicago, which doesn't seem like a fair comparison because they're much larger, but it's a large Midwest region from which we can obviously learn some things. But it's also got some regions from other parts of the country. So southern cities like Nashville, Jacksonville, Charlotte, you know, Southwest, including Austin and, you know, some West Coast, Sacramento. Some of these are not necessarily regions we would think of really as peers, but there's something in each one of them that we can learn from. You know, there's a handful of ones that are looked to right now, I think, in a lot of different circles as our nearest peers, like Austin, Nashville, Indy, and Charlotte, which incidentally just passed us to become the 14th largest city in America.
Charlotte did.
Uh-oh. Which was something that I think you could see coming in some of the most recent
data. We've been 15 for a long time, and we only popped up to 14 recently.
Yeah. And it's not something that I think we, one, have, you know, like a ton of control over, or two, like really matters all that much. You know, so that's, again, that's at the city level.
It's kind of bragging rights kind of feel to it.
It is.
You know,
it is.
It's those three last people who moved to Charlotte, probably from Ohio.
Probably.
And it's not because we're not growing. I mean, we added 30,000 people in a time where they added 60,000+. So they're just, and that's emblematic of the South. Anyways, I mean, southern and southwestern cities are just growing faster than a lot of Midwest cities. We're one of the fastest growing metros in the Midwest. And I actually think that, you know, becoming preoccupied with growth itself can at times do us a disservice because if we were growing faster right now, that would just be more housing units that were falling behind, mm-hmm. just as an example, you know. So we're at this pace of growth right now that, you know, keeps attracting investment and some good attention and some jobs, but at a rate that, you know, if we continue to put our minds to it and move forward with a regional strategy around housing, like it's actually more reasonable to think that we can build for our growth at a 2% rate than at, say, an 8% rate, which is what Austin grew at.
Well, and you know, your point of the Charlotte overtaking us and that sort of thing. So, okay, that begs the question, number one, or two questions. One, were they able to handle that growth?
I think that remains to be seen.
Right.
But yeah.
And if they did, how did they do it?
Yeah. Right.
And what can we learn from that?
Right.
And probably the answers are what we just talked about. They figured out the housing problem. If they had one, or they, how did they do it?
Well, this housing thing is not unique to
to
Central Ohio. The regions around the country are facing that, and they're doing it's a mixed bag as across the board as to how they're doing. A lot of it comes back to state policy, and that's actually something that when you're looking through this benchmarking report, you kind of need to have one eye on state politics or state policy around certain things, because that's what determines what's possible in some of these regions is what's going on in their state house. So there's some really interesting things happening, for example, in Minneapolis with their housing. But a lot of it is enabled through both the combination of what's happening at the local level and the state level.
Yeah.
Child care is a big one.
Yeah.
Early child care really comes back to state policy a lot of times, and where we could do better as a region. And that speaks to how, you know, we can lock arms with other regions around Ohio and say, we're all struggling with this issue. And, you know, it would serve all of us, not just large regions, but like I'm from the Mansfield area. There's Mansfields and Springfields and, and Dayton's and everything in between, that would benefit from, you know, growth and improvement in education, in, mm-hmm. in early child care, and that would trickle to workforce, and, you know, labor force participation rates and things like that. So, when you see things across this 22 region cohort that are really different, one of the questions that you can ask is, well, what's happening in Tennessee or North Carolina, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
It is, when you're looking at those 22 other cities, you're collecting data at the SMSA level.
At whatever number of counties makes up their MSA, it's
right.
not always 10 counties, but yeah, the
right.
that metropolitan statistical area.
So the benchmark study can really look at just Ohio cities with some comparisons and really come up with the overall issues so that at the state level policy can come into play.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's only the two, Cleveland and Cincinnati, here in Ohio within this cohort, but you know, MSA level data for some of the other places around the state mm-hmm. is also pretty easy to take a look at on some of these indicators at least. And yeah, I think that's part of what a next step is, you know, from a report like this.
The series of research studies has tremendous potential to support the work of local governments, which we just kind of touched upon there, nonprofits, you know, economic development drivers, and more. Can you share any examples of this research data and information being utilized to create that needed change? If they've taken what they've seen, again, without giving any answers.
Yeah.
To them, but saying, okay, here it is.
Yeah. So I think the first point is that, you know, calling out each of the sectors is really important because, you know, no one sector can really take on every aspect, every implication, if you will, from this report. So we really need to lean in together and leverage each of the sectors. And I think, you know, what we at the Columbus Foundation often try to help everyone remember is that the nonprofit sector plays a really important role mm-hmm. in that work.
Yeah.
It's the, you know, we call it the heart work of, you know, of our community. But I mean, there's really important things happening all across the nonprofit sector that touch on so many different aspects of our community. So, but you know, the nonprofit sector and philanthropy can't do it all. So we need a strong public sector and we need a strong, engaged corporate sector. So all that's really important for having takeaways. And you do see, I mean, you know, it's a little early maybe to assess what is being done in light of this particular report. But given that it's now a long-standing series, you know, I think we can point to things that our community is doing in the housing world, in the transportation world, things like Link Us, you know, are, mm-hmm. that's a great example of, you know, one of the things that we are constantly highest in this benchmarking series is reliance on single occupancy vehicles, for example, and the percentage of our region that uses transit is lower than a lot of the other regions. And that doesn't just come back to, you know, the what surface is touching the ground on our transit lines, you know, whether it's steel or rubber. It really comes down to where does it go? Does it go where you need to go?
Right.
Does it come as often as you need it to come? And does it come as late as you need it to come or as early as you need it to come? And those are things that COTA, in partnership with others in the region, have really been tackling. And that's what even voters, you know, went to the polls last fall to support, which, you know, with the bus rapid transit program. So I think there are things like that. There certainly, again, with housing. But I do think that we're going to keep coming back to some of these things, some of these health things, and having to really, you know, face them and lock arms, because they're not maybe so simple. It takes all the sectors, and it takes thinking about our community in a really comprehensive way and not just in kind of an episodic or isolated way.
Mm-hmm. The Linked Us program is just, when that really, it becomes reality, is going to be a huge change for many people who need to get from point A to point B to work.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not just adding bus lines. There's a lot going on.
It added the recreational dimension as well, too.
Exactly.
You know, so
well,
that
and
helps,
small business.
Absolutely.
And
helps soften the blow that's only one thing.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
And that's actually what makes Link Us, there's something in that for everyone
right.
because
right.
of that.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. But the other thing, too, that Columbus City Council's, the whole new zoning ordinances that are yeah. being changed, you can't fix housing if developers can't build.
Or build like it's in the 1950s.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You just can't.
The city of Columbus is setting a really good example by going and addressing this and updating mm-hmm. the zoning code so that, you know, we can build for the city that we are and mm-hmm. are becoming. So much of what they did in phase one of that was to just enable us to build more along our densest corridors, you know, in a way that just makes so much sense,
mm-hmm.
you know, leveraging what we've already built, leveraging in some cases infrastructure that's been underutilized for a long time. As you know, some of the urban core neighborhoods did experience population decline, you know, in the last, you know, say 3, 4, 5 decades. Those neighborhoods, as many are in Columbus, are growing as well and seeing some population growth. So we've got, you know, assets that we can leverage more as a community to tackle our growth challenges.
Mm-hmm. This is always an incredible opportunity to hear about information and resources available in our community. And thank you so much for coming to see us. This is, I love talking about the foundation over and above everything else, but it's really important for us to not just hear about this, but to know there are plans out there, things that are educating us about the needs of our community based on the facts that are available.
Yeah.
And that's important. We always give our guests the last word about what they think the audience should know at the end of the podcast, any additional information that you'd like to provide. And also, we're kind of wondering about, like, what's the next steps? What are the future steps for the benchmark? And is the next study scheduled?
Yeah, so I think something I've really become passionate about with as it relates to research in our community is this idea that, you know, you learn things from each report and study that come out, you know, and it feels like there's one that comes out at least every few weeks. You know, there's a new study finds XYZ, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we're pretty used to it being positive things, mm-hmm. but occasionally things come out, we're like, ooh, that hurts. We're going to have to pay more attention to that.
Like falling from 14 to 15.
thinking more like our air quality and those yes. types of things. When we've seen some kind of negative studies on that, and we need to obviously pay attention to that. Some of that's outside of our control, but there are obviously things we need to be doing on that front. But, you know, we have started in the last few years to put together kind of a year in research in review kind of piece or two, because these studies come and go in the news cycle,
mm-hmm.
and we can tend to forget about them. Mm-hmm. And there's no real place where you can kind of go back and review the body of research, if you will. What might all these disparate studies and reports and plans be telling us in the aggregate? And so we've really, again, in as part of that mission of generating community knowledge that can serve and support the most effective philanthropy possible, we've taken up the challenge of trying to pull all that together and to pull out the insights. And so in addition to reports like this one, really pointing to here's what you might have missed this year. Here's what, you know, you may have seen a headline on this, but here's how that fits into and contributes to this broader landscape of research. And as you said earlier, Brett, there's things that are related and might, you know, an improvement in this area might make for an improvement in that. So if we're creating more trails, we might be contributing to, you know, a reduction in that diabetes rate.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, if we're seeing things in research that maybe seemingly are independent or separate, maybe there are some ties and some connections. So, yeah, we try to pay attention to, it's impossible to kind of keep tabs on everything, but we try and kind of make sense of all that information that we can.
So is that something then that the foundation distributes?
Yeah, we've been publishing it on a LinkedIn newsletter called Meeting the Moment the last couple of years.
Okay.
That is something that we staff contribute to. So you'll see pieces on, you know, education, on growth, on the arts, and it's really pulling on expertise across the staff. You know, it's meant to... That title is really meant as so much of our grant making is to really help us as a community meet the moment, meet these times, the challenges that we face in this season that we're in, and so that's a great resource. What I would say as far as what's next for this series is, you know, you can only update this study so often because, you know, 55 indicators, they don't all get updated annually or on the same cycle. So you got to give it a couple of years usually between each edition to where there's updated data for the whole data set. So we are kind of beginning to plan for the next update. 2027, as you mentioned earlier, the series starting in 2007 would be the 20th anniversary. So we're kind of thinking of that as a way to kind of lift up the series as a whole and its value, but also the next set of updates. And, you know, that one will have some of the first, what we hope will be kind of post-pandemic. I mean, what was unique about this particular study is that the last one came out in 2019, right before the pandemic. And so this one coming out in 2024 with really data from 2023, 2024 was kind of the how are we doing coming out of COVID edition. I think the next one is going to give further view to that along with, you know, changes that are happening as a result of federal and state policy and funding cuts and things like that. So it'll be interesting, for example, to see with things like our library system, if, you know, we're seeing the same kind of usage and access that we've, you know, I think enjoyed here for some time. See how other regions are dealing with some of those same challenges and cuts. So that next one's going to have its own unique value. So that's kind of what we're thinking. And we're always, you know, thinking about how to engage the community in that dialogue as well. And so what kind of, you know, maybe some of your past guests even, but like, where is the expertise in our community? And how can we lean on that for insight about what some of this data is telling us? So we're always looking for those types of opportunities as
well.
Sounds
to me like a PhD dissertation in the making.
The last thing I would mention is, you know, we just announced at our annual meeting earlier in September the launch of a couple new initiatives. One is the Center for Change Management, which is really an expansion of our efforts to build capacity within the nonprofit sector and helping the sector think through some of the current fundraising challenges for sure, but also, you know, changes in technology, how to make sense of and leverage AI appropriately. You know, when things like mergers and acquisitions make sense, how to do that well, how to do that in a way that honors the past of organizations that might be sunsetting or being absorbed, but also, you know, doing it in a way that carries forward the mission and the kind of the heart of those services. And just thinking about how to help organizations confront even unique challenges around space. You know, there are organizations that aren't necessarily emerging, but they're becoming roommates, you know? And so how can you do that effectively to help them save money, but also stay mission-oriented and aligned? So that center is oriented around assisting with all of those considerations. And then we launched a second iteration of an emergency response fund that we had initially launched back at the beginning of the pandemic. This one is really oriented around helping organizations face the funding climate that we're in now with federal and state cuts to things like SNAP and other public benefits and other sources of funding that are really important resources for the sector that they're not sure they can count on anymore. So looking forward to launching that and doing some hopefully strategic grant making in that space as well.
Audience, don't forget, we will have all of this information, all the resources listed on the podcast show notes when we post the podcast. And it's going to include links to the actual report itself and all of the other items that Matt has mentioned. So thank you so much for all of this wonderful information. We really appreciate your time and expertise coming in to see us today.
Yeah, thank you, Carol and Brett. Yeah. It's great to be here with you.
Many thanks to our expert guest, Matthew Martin, Director of Community Research for the Columbus Foundation, for joining us today. Listeners, thank you for joining us as well, too. You're going to find the contact information and resources we discussed in the podcast show notes and on our website at lookingforwardourway.com. And we are looking forward to hearing your feedback on this or any of our other podcast episodes.
The views and opinions expressed by the experts interviewed on this podcast are their own and don't necessarily reflect the views of the podcast hosts or any affiliated organizations. The information provided in these interviews is for general informational purposes only and should not be considered as professional advice. Listeners are encouraged to consult with qualified professionals for specific advice or information related to their individual circumstances. The podcast host and producers don't endorse or guarantee the accuracy, completeness, or reliability of any information provided by the experts interviewed. Listener discretion is advised.